my favorite time of year. It's absolutely my favorite time of year. And as you pointed out this morning when I got up, Becca, it's the golden raspberries.
That's right.
Yes. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail line. We are pre-recorded this week. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today is Rebecca Friedman. How are you?
I am doing well, Sam.
And Becca Witzman. How are you?
Great.
Yeah. So you brought the news this morning.
I did. I was hoping that I could reach you before anyone else.
You did. Yeah. That was actually the first like English words that hit my retinas this morning.
Nice.
So congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently Kirk Cameron got the worst film of the year.
Worst actor.
Worst actor of the year. Okay.
Yes. He aspired to be the worst.
The Sieve. Yeah, well, it's one of those movies. Everybody saw the poster and thought the poster was great. And then I looked up...
This is Saving Christmas we're
talking
about, right?
Saving Christmas, yeah, of course.
It was a little confusing for me because Left Behind was on the list, and Kirk Cameron did a Left Behind movie.
Yes, he did.
This just wasn't on.
The incredibly low rent early version, which is, I'm assuming, going to be so much better than the Nick Cage one, but unfortunately, I haven't seen the Nick Cage
Perhaps
one.
Perhaps everything that comes that's remotely connected to Kirk Cameron in the future will be... Raspberried. Yes. Oh,
I see the...
Up for it.
The Kirk Cameron channel. So the plot of the movie. So you see that the awesome poster for Saving Christmas.
It looks like Last Action Hero.
No, I think it's a direct ripoff.
It looks like he's about to slam somebody with a candy cane.
Yeah, I think so. After explaining why he loves everything about Christmas, Kirk takes his brother-in-law, Christian, on a tour to convince him that various popular elements of Christmas are biblical. The two then return home for the remainder of the family Christmas party. This sounds like the plot of a first-year film student short subject. It doesn't really sound like something that... doesn't look like something that has Kirk Cameron holding enormous candy cane jumping through a pane of glass.
No, it definitely doesn't sound like one of those fun for the whole family movies that, you know, you usually release right around Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving, you take the family to the theaters.
Yeah.
I don't even know if this got big release. Did this get limited release?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was limited. Because who's going to go? It was limited in its release and in its efficacy and in its artistry and in its, I don't know, apparently acting.
Oh, boy. It's Christian media is like that. You know what I mean? It's you've had Pokemon and then you had Christian Pokemon or the people who hated Pokemon. You have Harry Potter and then people tried to write other stuff that was Harry Potter but with a biblical thing. It always feels like that there's this type of media that trails behind what's popular. Where somebody goes, hey, if we take that and make it Christian, the kids will love Christ more.
It's a niche moneymaker.
Yeah, but and it's always horrible. And this is something Mike and Mike Gillis and I talk about is you can kind of there. I don't know what it is, and I'd love to do some sort of analysis on it. But when you see something like that, there's something in your head that goes off as, hey, I think I know what this is, and it's that.
Is the Left Behind? Is that just sort of an after effect of cashing in on all the disaster movies of the mid 2000s?
Well, now. Post-rapture movies are a genre in and of themselves.
Okay, so this is independent of any of our earthquakes or volcano movies or, you know, 28 Days Later, for that matter. I mean, any of the horror flicks.
I think the Left Behind movies were more influenced by the disaster movies that were popular at the time. But, you know, that one, I'm blanking on all of the names.
What, Day After Tomorrow, 2012?
No, well, the other Rapture movies, because they're a genre.
Well, I remember seeing it on the 700 Club whenever I was a kid, the little Rapture, like, what would happen. And so whenever the books came out, I was like, oh, it's just books about this stuff on the 700 Club.
Yeah. Yeah, so,
Me didn't question it at all. I was like, oh, yeah.
The work of Estes Perkel, for example, is an example of that.
Oh, he's one of your favorites, isn't he?
Yeah.
And that dates all the way back to the 70s.
The one I like the most is, this goes way back. There are Rapture movies in the 30s. This is, like I said, this is a genre going back as far as film goes. And I'm an atheist, and that's what I talk about, because that's what we do. They tend to be a reflection of the times, and I kind of want to put Saving Christmas in that because the poster is such a ripoff of Last Action Hero,
which in and of itself is quite the old movie when you're looking at like making a contemporary thing, right? I mean, Last Action Hero was what, late 90s?
something
early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
And so why would you harken back to something 15 years old to say that's the imagery that we want to evoke? We want to evoke this imagery, something that's not even in people's minds anymore, really. I mean, at this point, we're on the Expendables, right?
Yeah. Well,
let's make a Christian Expendables.
The Christian Expendables would basically be the Book of Revelation, wouldn't it?
I guess so. Or a bunch of has-been pastors get together and talk over lunch and scones or coffee and I don't know.
Well, speaking of religious weirdness, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has sued a Swainsboro, Georgia elementary school for egregious violation of two students' religious freedom. After two parents complained that their children were subjected to teacher-led prayer, the teachers ostracized the siblings from the classroom during prayer time. One of the siblings was made fun of by other students and even held from recess while his teacher explained her Christian beliefs to him and claimed that his mother was a bad person for not believing in God. The family pulled their child from the school.
So like you do.
We've got two perspectives on this. We'll go. We got the parent and we've got the teacher. Parent, take it away.
Okay. Well, I will start by saying something that wasn't listed here was that the parents actually spoke to the school and they did nothing. They said they would do something. They did nothing. Honestly, this is kind of why as soon as we had a child, before we had a child,
right,
we specifically said we cannot have our kid grow up in the schools in Oklahoma because we were terrified of this,
right,
specifically of being ostracized by, we weren't even necessarily thinking the teachers at all, just the students in our mind were the,
well, one glance at the news of what's happening in Oklahoma these days and I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, that's why, you know, that as soon as the baby marched out of my womb, we were like,
there's an image.
We were like, okay, the clock is ticking. We've got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So did you have a John Philip Sousa thing going on during your labor?
I remember singing Johnny Cash. That's what I remember.
So
let's see. No, I honestly, this is the kind of thing that I think you see more in the South, and it's something I wanted to escape for my own child.
Yeah.
But not everybody has that option. And right. I don't exactly know what these parents are going to do, because do you just move them to the school district next door?
Where, you know, it might just be more of the same.
Well, also, you know, busing children that far, it's just a giant headache. Are they supposed to homeschool now? Can they afford that? I mean, I just worry about what the implications are for this family because they can't get a public education for their children.
Right.
We saw this in Louisiana, where there was a young boy of Buddhist descent that was being mocked and ostracized by his teacher. And the principal and the superintendent said, why don't you just, you know, bring him to the bigger town, the school in the bigger town where there's more Asians? Yeah. I mean, it's really despicable to me when we see people in public education that are supposed to be serving all students. I mean, I am an atheist. I teach students of all beliefs, and it is my job to do so, and it is my job not to harass students for their specific beliefs or ostracize them or put them in positions that, you know, they're going to be made fun of by their peers.
Honestly, Becky, talking about you, I think your identity as an atheist is secondary to your identity as a teacher. I think if you had to pick one, you'd go for the teacher more.
If I was to define myself, I certainly wouldn't go with the word that I think I'm not, like,
right,
not believing in God. I would go with all the words that I think I am.
Yeah,
but
or
I think
even
you're right,
humanist.
Sam.
Like, I think teacher, it would be like if you had to order things, which is stupid because you don't have to. But if you had to, the first one would be teacher.
I think you are right, Sam.
And
in
then
that,
humanist might be five or
in
six.
In that respect. And, you know, my perspective on critical thought and on, you know, the diversity of human belief systems does definitely inform my teaching. And I think that it informs the way that I exhibit my compassion for young learners. The way that this teacher did it, wrong.
Yeah.
So, like, sorry, I do not respect you. You don't hold a kid in for recess to talk about what you particularly personally believe. A kid wants to go play recess. We don't have enough recess time anyway. Like, that's just abominable to me. And we look at criticizing the Freedom From Religion Foundation for being a little overzealous. In this case, as you said, Becca, the parents tried to intervene. The solution for we're doing prayer at snack time, yep, rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, yay, God kind of thing, except a little bit more coercive and formalized. And the solution was, well, we'll just excuse you from the classroom during our class prayer, which is teacher-led anyway, which is completely not allowed anyway. So I don't think that the FFRF is being overzealous at all in this case.
No,
this is
no.
their last recourse.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the only thing they can do. What I'm wondering is, what happens to this teacher? Nothing?
That is a very good question.
Is that what happens to, like,
yeah.
They don't even, not even a slap on the wrist, just a, well, the child's no longer in your class, so now you can just do whatever you want and continue your,
now,
you know,
my question
your
is,
prayers.
I'm noticing this a lot more often lately. Is this my attention bias, that this has been happening all the time and I just didn't see it until recently? Or have we turned a corner on this one and people are trying to push the boundaries here?
I think from what I understand, it's a little bit more of the former.
Okay.
When you look at particular articles or social media shares about this, I have been seeing people in comment sections saying, you know, I don't know why this is getting such big news now. This happens all the time, every day, all across America. We heard it when we were on tour 2 years ago as well in different pockets of the country, that this is how people grew up and you just didn't have any recourse. You didn't have an advocacy organization like FFRF or American Humanist Association,
right,
to advocate on your behalf. But I wouldn't discount perhaps the persecution complex and overzealous sort of actions of fundamentalist evangelical Christians.
Right.
There's definitely throughout our I mean, I did a master's degree with a lot of people that were ESL teachers or learning to refine their English teaching skills. And one of the big motivators for some people was mission work.
Sure.
Specifically wanting to inject yourself in public education.
Mission work is fine. And I really, really dislike the argument but just not in public schools. I really dislike the argument is like, well, this has been happening all the time. Why are you guys complaining now? Well, it doesn't matter if you've been getting away with it. It's still a violation of civil rights. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, I'm going to get schooled on Judge Roy Moore.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee. ANNEXradio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail line, toll-free nationwide. Now, there's this guy who goes by the name Roy Moore, and he's a judge And I keep hearing about him. I mean, I've been hearing about him for years. And I really don't know anything about him other than, well, he's kind of a jerk and doesn't understand civil rights. So today, you guys have put together some material to help me understand what's going on, correct?
Yeah, Roy Moore is a judge. He's also other things.
Other things, too.
Yes, yeah. Sam, you've been hearing about Roy Moore for a little while now, because you might have heard about him as the 2014 Pierce County Prayer Breakfast keynote speaker.
Okay.
So our little connection up here is that, yeah, the Pierce County Prayer Breakfast was held at the Tacoma Dome last year. And typically, Mayor Strickland, or whoever the mayor of Tacoma is, speaks at the event just as a public official saying, hey, we welcome you to our fine city. Thank you for holding your event here. We like you, commerce, yay, yay, yay. Right?
Right.
Last year, 2014, Roy Moore, keynote speaker, caused the mayor to boycott and all of city council to refuse to attend. And they said that, hey, you know what? Moore's position on marriage equality, specifically on marriage equality, was inconsistent with the mayor's values and inconsistent with Tacoma's commitment to be a city that was inclusive.
Yeah. I mean, Tacoma gets pretty good ratings on being an LGBT-friendly city here and there, doesn't it?
It does. It definitely does. I think The Advocate, which is a LGBT interest magazine, ranked Tacoma as the gayest city on a number of highly unscientific measurements. But amongst those, number of elected LGBT officials and number of roller derby leagues.
I do remember hearing about this last year. I didn't remember anything about him specifically, but now what's coming out about him?
So it coming
say,
out.
Ha.
So, but here's the thing. They boycotted him just because of his position on marriage equality. What they totally didn't even scratch the surface on is Roy Moore's commitment to basically injecting Christianity and those Judeo-Christian values into our government.
And also ignoring the government sometimes in general.
Yes. Yes, he is the government, but he ignores the government. Anyway, here's the thing. Roy Moore, at one point, was actually stripped of his position as the Alabama Supreme Court Justice by the federal government because he ignored legal rulings of higher courts to allow his own religious convictions. This is all about a, like, 5,000-pound Ten Commandments monument.
Yeah, that's the thing I remember, too, was the huge albatross of a Ten Commandments monument that...
Right, he was told that he had to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And he said... LOL, no.
I think he said, nin, boo, boo, no. I don't know
if
he said...
Right, something along those lines.
Yes.
And I'm sure at the time he sounded no better than my toddler.
Well, Roy Moore is now 68, and but when he was prior, you know, when he was a little bit younger, not quite a toddler, but a little bit younger, he was actually like a county judge, and he had a homemade wooden plaque of the Ten Commandments hanging up in his courtroom, and they told him, hey, take that down. And
right.
Caused a fuss then. He caused a fuss when he was elected to the Supreme Court of state of Alabama. And lately, the biggest fuss that he's been causing is
Let's go with tantrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a tantrum, yeah. But the
variations
thing is
on a theme.
That it's not as dismissible. I mean, it has real harmful effect on people.
Well,
here's the thing.
I got a question before you move on.
Okay.
So this guy was a guy who was so bad at his job as a judge that he gets kicked out of the judge club.
Alabama has re-elections, though.
He did get kicked out. They were like, you can't be a judge because you clearly cannot judge.
But the thing is, you can be barred from running for office, I think. I'm pretty sure.
I guess?
It looks like he was barred from being in his position for a very determined amount of time.
Yeah, isn't that what ethics commissions are for? I admit, I'm not
I wish I knew the answer as well, because it seemed very odd for somebody to say, you are kicked out of your chair, you can no longer have it, and then he can just have it back. Well,
right.
He can have it back because the people of Alabama elected him to the Supreme Court.
Right.
So his most recent shenanigans...
Only most of an excuse.
Yes.
I mean, that's going to be... he was reelected by the people of Alabama. Da, 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 da. But he got kicked out because he can't do his job. We're not talking about somebody whose job it is to be a representative. We're talking about somebody whose job it is to understand and enact the law. They have to understand the law. They have to abide the law because they are the interpreters of the law. And what this guy is doing here is saying, oh, you know what, as you've been pointing out, yeah, I don't really care about the law. And
so... He kind of ignores the whole prudence part of jurisprudence.
This is like This is like saying, I'm an engineer, but I don't believe in physics.
or I understand that some people make me believe in physics, but I'm just not going to use physics in my execution of my engineering. Great. Tell me when your building topples.
Back to the facts of the matter.
This building is toppling.
Okay.
And quickly. So here's the thing. January 25th, you have 2 days after a ruling that Alabama's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. A district judge, Callie Grenad, she issued a 2-week stay on the decision to allow the state to appeal to the 11th Circuit Court. And Alabama attorneys asked for a stay until SCOTUS, until the federal Supreme Court rules on the issue in June. SCOTUS basically ignored them. They're like, yeah, we're not going to grant you a stay.
Yeah.
You can start doing this now. Yes, we'll hear at the federal level in April and then rule in June. Then on February 8th, Roy Moore issued an administrative order to probate judges in Alabama to ignore any higher court's ruling and instead follow the state law that prohibited that same-sex marriage.
The answer to if he can do that is no. The answer is no.
Yes. He believes that his answer is yes, that he's allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, though. We then had these conflicting rulings. So after SCOTUS says, no, we're not going to grant you a stay on this, go ahead with the marriage licenses. And the state Supreme Court said, no, you can't issue these marriage licenses. You have to follow the state law because the state law, I say, is still valid. You had counties that really took a number of different actions. You had some counties that ignored Moore's order and began issuing marriage licenses. Hooray! Yay! Happy cuddles, couples getting married. I suppose happy cuddles as well.
I would assume.
Yay, happy cuddles.
And then you had other counties that ignored the SCOTUS order and would only issue licenses to heterosexual couples. And then here's the really weird one that we've seen actually in, I think, Florida and a few other states.
Oklahoma.
Okay.
This has happened.
A number of counties just said, we're not issuing licenses to anyone at all.
Okay.
No more marriages for you.
All right.
If you guys can't play nice.
Because that'll be popular.
No. So... And it's sort of people thumbing their nose. This is not even, though, that the elected officials or the notaries won't notarize and solemnize a marriage. This is literally the county saying, we have conflicting orders. We're just not going to do any of it until this is sorted out.
Yep.
So you had some people that are like, we don't want to get in trouble either way. Because here's the thing. Roy Moore can sue or call you, you know, negligent or whatever, if you are a county who's issuing the licenses.
Well, wasn't he also threatening gubernatorial action against people who did it? Who would?
Yes, that's the thing. That you had the counties that said, hey, if we issue this marriage license, we're going to be in a legal battle with our state Supreme Court justice.
Judicial action, I'm thinking.
Yes, yeah, judicial, not gubernatorial.
Oh, okay.
He's not governor.
Okay.
That's one of his future plans.
Right, okay.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Not enough power.
Right. So you had people that are like, well, oh dear, we either get judicial action from our state.
Or federal.
So we're just going to hold off on doing any of it, right?
Yeah. That's kind of a reasonable move if you think that he had any power whatsoever to make this call to begin with.
But the thing is, one, this is taking their ball and going home. And two, Alabama, it's not like Alabama doesn't have a history of federal, you know, forces having to come in order to defend people's rights.
Yeah, there might have been that guy who one time stood in the way, right? Yeah. that might have happened in Alabama.
Yeah. This is not a unique moment.
Is this George Wallace?
Well, here's the thing. Roy Moore fancies himself on the correct side of history and specifically references slavery and civil rights based on people's color.
Wait, as though he's doing something for civil rights?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Just had to clarify.
But that's always how this works. I mean, George Wallace thought he was on the right side of history. He wasn't.
Hey.
So before we get there, though, we had February 12th. We had a Mobile County probate judge, Don Davis. He was actually sued for not issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. He was sued by Judge Grenad, who issued that original ruling overturning the ban. So you had that probate judge that refused to issue marriage licenses to gay people, and so that, you know, the civil rights judge basically said, we're suing you. You're in contempt, right? And she also said that any probate judges who don't comply will be included in that lawsuit. So you then had Roy Moore declaring that if SCOTUS rules in June, he's going to defy SCOTUS if it rules in favor of gay marriage. So he's now on the talk circuit. He's on the Good Morning America. He's on the thing.
Right. He's on Fox News, yes. Definitely.
My religion is more important than your rights. Because this is the problem when you've got dominionist people like this in power, is they don't see the Constitution as the law of the land. They see it as being superseded by some old guy in the sky invented when we thought, infection was because you were a bad person. And as a result, if we have social movement forward, if we decide that perhaps we're going to be a little bit more inclusive of a society, maybe we're not going to stop ostracizing people because they're slightly different than we are. He says, well, yeah, the Constitution might say that, the people might say that, but this is where I get my most magical sky fairy. This is where most of my sarcasm comes out about religious people. It's because you have somebody in power, somebody who thinks they've got power, and somebody who aspires to more power. This guy's about power. He wants to control people. He wants to tell you how to run your life.
Yeah, this is always where I draw my line. Like, right. Whenever you take your religion and you try to oppress people with it, like other people who, and you have them with their frowns on their faces and they've done absolutely nothing wrong, that's whenever I draw the line and I'm like, no, what you're doing's wrong.
At no point I've ever asked anybody to like marriage equality. That's not for me to say. That's not for you to say. I think you'd be a better person if you did, but I can't make that judgment for you. But if you're a person in the government, if you're a justice of the peace, if you're a county comptroller, if you're a Supreme Court judge, and that's the law of the land, that's your job. Mm-hmm. Not listening to God, following the law. Anyway.
So apparently since then, he has clarified his remarks and said, if SCOTUS rules, yes, of course, I won't like the law, but that's the law of the land. So he has clarified that.
Oh,
but,
so he doesn't lose his job this time?
Yeah, I guess so. But earlier, here's the thing.
He knows how that ends up, right? Yeah, he's played that game before.
Here's the thing. He says that SCOTUS, originally he was saying SCOTUS really doesn't have the authority to rule on marriage. And he suggested that any ruling in favor of same-sex marriage would be similar to the Dred Scott case or Plessy v. Ferguson. Plessy v. Ferguson.
Oh, this is states' rights crap.
It is total states' rights crap.
Yeah.
And he's saying states' rights is more important than something else. Plessy v. Ferguson was actually overturned with Brown versus Board of Education.
I love this.
Than the Constitution. States' rights are more important than the Constitution. That's his argument.
This is one of those situations where I think it makes sense to talk about politics that doesn't necessarily have to do with religion in the context of religion, is that these states' rights people, specifically these dominionist states' rights people, have a very narrow definition of where these rights are. Mm-hmm. If you get above the state level, the federal government has no rights because the laws of the states obviously overrule the laws of the federal laws. If you get lower, on a lower rung than states' rights, like county rights or town rights or individual rights, those don't count either. Because it's really easy for pig-headed, ignorant people to get into state governments in places like Alabama, so those are the only laws that matter.
Buck stops with state.
Yeah. Buck stops where it stops where I can tell you what to do, is what it is. Is whatever interpretation you want, whatever interpretation allows me to control your life, that's the interpretation that follows. And that doesn't sound like something that has anything to do with atheism, skepticism, or the separation of church and state, or humanism, but I think it totally does.
I have this little vision in my mind of him standing around where people argue with him and say, you don't have the right, et cetera, et cetera. And then he goes, I am above the law. I see it.
Well, you want to hear some actual real things that he said? Not
sure.
I am above the law.
Oh, I can't wait.
So he actually was interviewed on Good Morning America, and he was there lamenting that gay marriage will lead to father-daughter and mother-son marriages.
Oh, jeez, that'll...
We've never heard this before. He says that if two transgenderds are allowed to marry, then how big will their family be?
Transgenderds.
Their family. They could be marrying one or two or more people. That's his thing. Yes.
Okay. When there was no data, and all, and it was really easy for you to prey on fear, on people's fears, maybe that's the case. But let's look at a map of where gay marriage is legal.
What, 38 states now?
Yeah, and that's it's
if we count Alabama,
right? And some of these states, gay marriage has been legal for a long time. Has any of this actually happened yet?
Where's your evidence, Mister? Plural marriage between 8 million people of all different sexual orientations and genders in Massachusetts,
but we're vying for it. I'm just kidding.
It's our agenda.
Let's, right.
Although if I may say,
I won't stop until everyone's married to everyone.
Yeah.
You can't say no.
I mean, there's a part of me that just doesn't really care.
Yeah, part of me too.
Yeah, I just, okay, why, you know, maybe weird family marriages are bad because that's also a power dynamic and that's also exploitation. But I don't know. I just, why, the only reason we care about this is because this is what your religion says, and you're trying to make your religion stand for that, stand in for the law of the land. That's where it is.
So there's some little postscripts about what we can expect from Moore in the future, or what we can expect from his supporters and detractors.
Fair enough.
There's actually a Republican state senator, Tom Watley, who introduced a bill to the Alabama state legislature raising the maximum age for state judges from 70 to 75, because it doesn't mention Moore at all, but it opens up the possibility for Moore's reelection, because he would by default be booted by age restrictions at the next election.
Right.
Because he would be 71 before the next election. So that's in the works. And then on the other side, Human Rights Campaign has requested Moore's phone and email records to determine whether he violated judicial codes of conduct when giving the orders not to issue same-sex marriage licenses. They suspect that he actually used his office to encourage the Alabama Policy Institute and the Alabama Citizens Action Plan, those are both anti-LGBT groups, to file emergency petitions to the Alabama Supreme Court to try and stop it. So he's under investigation again for his ethics again.
So let's see, which ways can this go? Okay, so one of them is he gets kicked out, but this law passes and then he just gets reelected soon. Anyway, in the next one, because apparently if he gets kicked out, it just doesn't matter? Question mark.
Well, yeah. And if he can't possibly be reelected, there are some that are speculating that he's eyeing a gubernatorial run.
Yes, I actually I read that he's qualified for other positions if he gets
qualified.
OK. Well, he's not
attempting to qualify. He's doing the qualifying lap. Yeah, I'm with
and
you there.
For whatever reason, I have a feeling that this is actually positive publicity for him in Alabama.
Oh,
the fact that he's doing this.
Yeah, this
is great gubernatorial.
But as Mike Gillis says, it's Tom Bombadil power. The minute he gets out of Alabama, he's unelectable.
Is he trying to leave Alabama? I doubt it.
Unless they built like a secret tunnel between Oklahoma and Alabama. Right, then he'd probably be fine.
He'd be welcome at their pear breakfast.
Yeah, absolutely.
For some reason, he ended up here. What?
Wasn't that called the Trail of Tears?
Now, after all of that, reflect.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Okay, but seriously, how did that guy end up here?
What? Roy Moore?
In Tacoma.
Well, it was Pierce County.
Okay, right.
Well, we have our favorite Christian Dominionist right here in Pierce County.
Oh, did
I'm not sure whether Jim McCune specifically has anything to do with bringing
McCune! I hope me doing that is his ringtone.
Okay. Well, you want to hear some funny factoid tidbits about Roy Moore?
Absolutely.
He is a West Point graduate. He's a former kickboxer, and he was a military police officer in Vietnam.
He was a kickboxer?
Yes.
I wonder what kind of kickboxing he did. Like Muay Thai? Or...
I don't know.
That's a conversation neither here nor there.
Yeah. I wish that he would go into early retirement and enjoy his geriatric kickboxing.
That's why I said Muay Thai. It's like, yeah, geriatric guy doing that. It'd be really funny. Anyway,
yep.
I don't know.
So, Roy Moore,
well,
we hope to see less of you.
The other side of this, I guess the good news in this is on the other side of this. This is all happening in the context where the Supreme Court is set to rule on marriage equality
in June.
So this is coming up, right?
Yes, it is coming up. Really, what I'm seeing here is the last vestiges of fighting, like we saw in the 70s with school integration. Here's the thing. Brown versus Board of Education was 1954. It said separate schools for people of color and white people is not constitutional. And you had until the mid-70s of people, you know, resisting this integration. And I think that what we're seeing here at an accelerated pace is you know, old folks and old way of thinking that are struggling to hold on to this and trying to defy this and say this is states' rights versus federal rights, and this is the violating God's law and anything they can possibly
hold
on to.
And somehow they have enough power to write on a little memo some order as though it's, you know, meaningful, and people listen. It's shocking.
I don't want to, I can't believe I was just about to say I don't want to jinx it on an atheist show. Yeah, but, I mean, the fact they're saying no, do gay marriages in Alabama, is that good news? Is that
I think that the Supreme Court refusing to honor a stay in this and saying go ahead with it, we're going to rule anyway, is quite buoying to me. I think that it would seem as if the court was going to, you know, think about ruling against marriage equality, that they would say, yeah, let's be cautious. Let's take the conservative approach to this. Yeah. Let's wait for a few more months to see if, you know, we want to rule on it. But it would seem bad practice to say, go ahead with your gay marriages. Go ahead with your lesbian marriages.
Because none of them are going to matter. Yeah, I can see
it
totally
going
that. And
we're going to yank them in 4 months.
I could totally seeing it playing that way. I don't know. Where do you think this is going
to
go?
No, I'm looking forward to June. I think it's going to be a great party.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like when they reboot a series I like, where I try to have as little, like Ghostbusters, which is coming up. I try to have as little attention to it as possible, so that I can just enjoy it.
Whenever you watch, you know, the waves of social change coming, and you see the crest finally on its way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
I think it'll be good.
I'm really happy.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about government malfeasance in regards to religion and continue our trials of Clark County. Not real trials, fake trials.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVsTheMartians.com.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. Brian Harvey is the executive director of the Portland branch of the Center for Inquiry, an organization that supports and serves the freethought community in Clark County, Washington, as well as Portland, Oregon. He is also the co-chair and director of the Secular Coalition for Oregon and joins us today with some updates about the In God We Trust resolution still looming large in Clark County.
Thanks for having me.
So, you were the guy who put together the E Pluribus Unum rally earlier this month with the, Humanists of Washington was involved, with CFI Portland,
Vancouver Skeptics, Freedom from Religion Foundation, Greater Portland Area, Humanists of Portland, right? Humanists of Greater Portland. So lots of different groups down there.
Yeah, there absolutely were, and it really was a grassroots reaction. I mean, there were a lot of different individuals and organizations that all at the same time realized something had to be done. And it's really been a collaborative effort where a lot of people have been willing to work together to show strength in numbers on this and send a message to the counselors that they certainly don't represent all of the community or all of Clark County with the decisions they're trying to make.
So last week, our listeners actually heard some of the highlight reel from the citizens' comment. Can you sort of give us a little bit of background, since Sam and I haven't been back down there? What's been going on sort of behind closed doors or in chamber?
Right. Well, I mean, when we started this opposition, I think that most of us had in our mind that our chances of success were less than 50%, that there was a better chance that, you know, we could put up a fight, we could make a statement, but that this was going to go forward. We were pleasantly surprised that the testimony at the first public hearing was able to persuade the counselors, or at least the two not introducing the motion, that is Chair Mador and Counselor Stewart, didn't second the motion to vote on the dissolution, which was introduced by Counselor Mielke. So it died after public testimony for lack of a second, which you guys probably already reported on. What happened after that was that the counselors attempted to potentially vote on this behind closed doors. They have a board time meeting, which is technically open to the public, but it takes place in a room that only has, you know, three extra seats. It doesn't have an opportunity for public comment. And it was done in a stealthy fashion. This was something that they only even added to their agenda on the website late the afternoon, the day before, after they were pressured by the local newspaper. So it was obvious they were trying to get this to a vote in a scenario where they weren't in front of the public.
So I'm sort of...
We were able to organize an email campaign. They postponed that decision, didn't make the decision behind closed doors, and it'll be up for a vote. It'll be up for discussion again this coming Tuesday at the regular public meeting.
So are you going to show up like we did earlier and have the same kind of recapitulation? Are they expecting that?
I'm not sure what they're expecting. This is really just, I can't, at this point, I'm not totally sure what it is that the counselors are trying to accomplish. I mean, this does very much seem a repeat of the same public meeting that they already had that lasted almost 3 hours. They heard a great volume of public testimony. They've obviously heard a lot from all the different sides via email and you know, other forms of communication in the last few weeks. It does seem that we are going to go through kind of the same circus where everyone shows up and there's another 3 hours of public testimony, and we aren't entirely sure where it's going to go. The thing that might be different now is that since this kind of won't die, since it's something that seems to have some legs despite the fact that it's not supported by the community, we are trying to offer a compromise to the counselors to switch the wording of the new display to E Pluribus Unum from In God We Trust. We think that that gives the counselors everything they've asked for, a national motto that respects and reflects and honors our history and traditions, but one that isn't divisive and promotes unity. So that is, the hope is that they will take this out, that they will see, I mean, the claim by Counselor Mielke, who introduced this resolution, is that this isn't a religious display, that this doesn't have any religious connotations to it. And if that's the case, it should be very easy for him to back off of that, back off of In God We Trust, and accept E Pluribus Unum. Which, by the way, I mean, one of his main talking points is it's on your money with In God We Trust. Well, E Pluribus Unum is on your money, too, and it's been there longer. So,
and it's more inclusive.
Way more inclusive.
That sounds like a familiar fight, Sam.
I
only came to knowledge about your Pierce County fight just kind of in doing research for gearing up for Clark County. But it sounds like you guys went through very much the same. And didn't you get a counselor or a commissioner up there to introduce E Pluribus Unum?
Yeah. Well, what's really interesting is we had there were two counselors. It's a 7-person board, right? Pierce County's a 7-person board, and there was two counselors who basically decided to troll the council, and they introduced a bunch of amendments that included a number of gods, changed to something that allowed for, you know, something non-Christian, that asked for it to be in multiple languages, and they were all repeatedly panned by everybody supporting In God We Trust, because, you know, it was like basically, you know, oh, In God We Trust is you know, ecumenical. And then somebody said, well, why don't we include God, Allah, you know, or a bunch of stuff. And they said,
right.
No. We're a Christian nation. We need to honor our Christian tradition. So
right,
it's ecumenical,
right,
until it stops being, until it actually needs to be ecumenical. Then it becomes
right.
Christian.
And, yeah, I'm actually wondering how far they would take it. Like, if they, you know, went through the same song and dance this time as they did last time, would we see it again in 3 weeks? Are they just going to keep pushing until somebody's not there screaming about it?
Yeah, Brian, what's...
I think we should just go and scream about it.
Yeah, Brian, what's your sense of this? Is Milky just going to keep doing this until he wins?
I think Milky is... Listen, I think the Chair Mador is starting to get a little bit more fed up with this. Counselor Milky, this will never die for him.
Right.
But his cohort, the person who is most supportive of this resolution, and I guess maybe we should mention for the listeners, if you haven't already, there are only three people running the county in
yeah.
Clark County, which means that these two guys can basically pass this.
Now, that is about to change, right?
That is about to change, and one of the things that's been suggested by one of the counselors, Stewart, who, by the way, is a former Republican, well, a current Republican, I think these are nonpartisan positions, but she is a Republican and a Christian, but has been willing to recognize that it doesn't threaten her faith to not stamp In God We Trust in the council chamber. So she's been supportive of, you know, not putting this up, of recognizing its divisive nature. But, you know, they are going to five councilors after a November election this fall. They just had a charter change. A new charter was approved. And that's actually part of why they moved from being county commissioners to county councilors. So if you see me mixing those two words up, that's why. But yeah,
right.
One of the suggestions is that they wait until they get five people on the board so this decision doesn't look like it's just two guys pushing their own agenda on the county.
Well, would that be part of the reason why you think they're moving forward, you know, repeatedly to try to do it before they have five voices that have to weigh in?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that Counselor, it's possible. I think that Chair Mador is a little bit more politically competent. I mean, he has some sense of how this looks. Counselor Milky, I don't think, cares at all. Yeah, he would love to pass this with only three people.
Right.
And I think Chair Mador is a little bit caught in between the pragmatism of Counselor Stewart and kind of the rabidness of Counselor Milky, and he's having to straddle that line. He did support, he was the second vote in a 2-1 vote in 2013, which approved prayers, invocations before their meetings, which was another Councilor Milky resolution, and Chair Mador joined him in that time. Mm-hmm. So he actually, that's the way his sensibilities trend, but I think he is a little bit caught in the middle. To speak to your earlier question of whether they're just trying to wear people down, I'm not sure. I think that at this point it would look bad if they kept dragging it out and waiting until there weren't enough people there to tell them no.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the media would hold them accountable to that. I'm not certain whether they care enough or not. I guess we're going to find out.
So one thing I was being told online as the meeting that just happened was that specifically from Twitter account News Lady Katie, who's a reporter with The Columbian, that apparently they were not happy with those of us from Tacoma and those on the other side of the river.
Well, that's kind of ironic, isn't it? Because this is a resolution that was introduced by an out-of-state special interest group. I mean, this is being pushed by an organization, and I haven't listened to your previous broadcasts on this, but you very well may have covered this. In God We Trust America Incorporated is a
Bakersfield, California.
Bakersfield, California. And as we pointed out in our open letter to the counselors, the original resolution that Counselor Milky introduced was a word for word. I mean, with except for two or three words, it was a word for word copy of the sample resolution that's on In God We Trust America's website. So this is obviously the brainchild of someone outside of the community. It's being pushed by people outside of the community. They have a sympathetic counselor in the community.
Right.
But the idea that people who are in the region couldn't stand up for the separation of church and state and that would somehow invalidate their opinions when the whole idea for this has come from far outside the community,
well,
just seems like a pretty rich.
You know, honestly, as people of the state who just faced this exact fight and lost, yeah, of course we're going to step in and help our fellow neighbors who are fighting the same fight.
And let's talk about that open letter, because it's, yes, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. So at
we've got pictures of our guy holding it at the actual meeting.
That one. That's the letter from Bakersfield, but right now we've got that.
Yeah. Right now at humanistsofwashington.org, there's a open letter, much like the one we did for Pierce County, but this one was written by Brian. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what into your authorship of that this open letter?
Well, it wasn't just me. There was a lot of feedback that went into writing this. So this is something that I drafted in cooperation with a lot of other organizational leaders and a lot of other community members. And we all fiddled on the language. But the main gist of it is, you know, it's a point-by-point takedown of why the counselors say they're introducing this and how it doesn't accomplish those goals, and how the replacement of In God We Trust with E Pluribus Unum, you know, if they are dead set on putting up a motto or a plaque, some type of historical phrase in the council chambers, we're trying to give them an out. We're trying to give them a way to save face, to do what they claim to be accomplishing, but to do so in a way that's unifying and doesn't sow division in the community.
One thing that was really exciting, actually, is at last count, I think there were definitely over 100 signatures there.
There are 118 signatures, and it looks like the majority from them are within Clark County. And that's incredibly important, because those are the people who are being those are the people who are being represented by this 3-person board.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And one of the things we tried to emphasize in the letter is, you know, we encourage everyone to sign on, to share it with whoever you know, but especially share it with anyone you know in Clark County. If you are a Clark County resident, please do go onto the Humanists of Washington website and sign this. Your input carries a lot more weight with the counselors, and it also inoculates us against the charge that this is just another form of opposition from outside of the community. So the hope is that we can get as many Clark County residents on there as possible, and yes, that will carry the most weight. Certainly.
And also, I you know, this week I can't go. We can only take so many days off work to drive down there. But you are planning another. You are planning a public presentation again this time out.
That's absolutely right, and I hope that people aren't burnt out. I think that it's more important to show up this time than the last time. And by the way, I think it's more important to, even if people have, who are listening, already emailed the counselors about this, email them again.
Yeah.
Email them the draft letter and the draft resolution. Encourage them to adopt the E Pluribus Unum resolution. Please show up again, because they are trying to wear us out, or at least they can't be shown that that's a tactic that's going to work. And so we hope to show up in greater numbers. Tuesday, there will be a rally. There's a big plaza out in front of the county building. This is the Clark County Public Service Center in Vancouver, Washington. There's a plaza out front. We'll be holding an informal rally there at 9 a.m.
More donuts?
Free coffee and free coffee, free donuts for people of all faiths or none.
So that's 9 a.m. on Tuesday?
9 a.m. on Tuesday.
9 a.m. on Tuesday.
Yes.
I guess.
And then the meeting starts at 10. I think we'll head in around 9:30. And even if you can't make it to the rally and you can make it to the meeting, that'd be great. If you're going to make it to the meeting and you could sign up to speak, that would be even better. So any way that people are willing to participate is great. And we need to show strength in numbers here. So
fantastic. So, Brian Harvey, you're the head of, or one of the co-chairs, I believe, of CFI Portland. Where, if people want to find out more about what you guys are doing down there, where would I send them?
Boy, I think that right now the battle is being waged kind of on social media. So if they want to look up Center for Inquiry Portland, CFI Portland on Facebook, that's where you're going to see the most up-to-date information about what's going on. I'm trying to get stuff, you know, onto our website as well. But if you want to stay up-to-date, I would say Center for Inquiry Portland's Facebook page would be the place to go for the newest information. Oh, and of course, the letter on your website. That is very important as well.
Links to both these places will be on the website. Brian Harvey is the executive director of the Portland branch of the Center for Inquiry and serves as the co-chair of the Secular Coalition for Oregon, joining us today about stuff going on in Clark County. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so, guys, so much news. Like, there's that stuff going on in Oh, what, Arkansas? Or what was that legislature one?
There's Arkansas, the prohibiting LGBT anti-discrimination laws at the local level.
There's the Tennessee lawmaker who wants to put Almighty God in the state constitution. This is a fight that's going on, and we could talk about it.
Almighty God and Savior. Savior's in there as well.
We could talk about it till we're blue in the face, but unfortunately we can't because it's the top of the hour. Thank you guys very much. You can go to our website. Thank you, Becky. Thank you, Becca. My name is Sam. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. This is the first of our pre-recorded interregnum, and we will see you guys next week.